Hello, everyone, and welcome to Creative Psychopaths, a horror movie podcast and the world's premier kitchen for horror sandwiches. What are horror sandwiches, I hear you ask? Well, it's a lovely horror, lovely movie filling surrounded by two slices of chatty goodness. I forgot what the podcast was about there. Apologies. My name's Mark, and as always, I'm joined by Matthew. Hello.
Hello.
It's just the two of us. We're back to just being the two of us.
Feels very lonely, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, not lonely. I've enjoyed having you here without that golden voiced man luring us into his web of whatever it is. I don't know.
We're five live at best, aren't we? As opposed to Radio 4.
I don't think we should do ourselves down. I think we're
much too regional for Radio 4 listeners.
No, we're pretty good. We're pretty good. Don't sell yourself short. People love us. They love our ways. Whatever those ways are, who's to say? What was I going to talk about? I don't know.
I don't either. Unless you're going to jump into the first slice of bread.
No. Well, that feels too much. That feels like, oh no. But what I did want to do, actually, I watched a short horror movie this week that I thought I might recommend to people. That's nice of me. I watched a haunted doll horror on YouTube. It's called Finley. I think it is, anyway. I really should check that, shouldn't I, before I actually go around recommending things. But here I am.
Does he or does he not love to fight?
Love to fight? Oh, I see. Fit Finley.
We're back to wrestling again, aren't we? We had a week away. That's it.
Yeah. No, that's good. Does he have a little leprechaun mate? No, he doesn't. Anyway, it's actually a horror comedy. I quite enjoyed it. So it's about a haunted doll, but essentially he's about as useful as a haunted doll actually would be. So he's sort of consistently thwarted. His attempts are consistently thwarted to the point of the people who live in the house get a little bit bored of him. It's a bit of fun. It's an enjoyable watch. About 26 minutes or something like that, and it'll just fly by. So I recommend, if you're just sitting around looking for something to watch, give it a go.
When you've got that bit of time before you go to bed, sort of thing, isn't it? Because I often find myself a loose end around that time. I'm just being like, it's 9:30, 10:30. I'm not going to bed for another half an hour or so, but I've got nothing to do.
It's good. It's good for that
washing up or something.
Oh no, that's boring. You want to watch a short horror film? I actually quite like some of the YouTube short horror films. I've seen quite a few. I watched again, God knows why, Ari Aster's, I guess it was his first one, his short movie, which it's actually a pretty nasty watch, to be honest. It's I can't remember what it's called now. Do you know?
Well, I know Bo was an original short, wasn't it? It dragged it out to 3 hours.
No, it's called The Strange Thing About the Johnsons.
I'll have to have a look at that one.
Yeah.
I've never seen that.
It's just shy of half an hour. I will say, though, that it does slot into the effed up category. Don't expect to be cheery while watching it. There you go. Maybe one day I'll do a little slice of bread on YouTube shorts, and or I could send you some to watch, and we'll have a little what did you think of that sort of thing. Anyway,
yeah, I'm sure we can. There's something there for sure.
Yeah, oh, I love that. I love to hear ideas cooking up before we get into the first slice of wonderful, wonderful bread.
Yeah, so it's good that we use the actual podcast to just get our admin out, isn't it?
Yeah. talking to each other is probably the best way for us to cook up ideas. Plus, it gives the listeners a little sizzle for the future. They go, "Ooh, I like the sound and smell of that particular idea." I'm not sure what I'm talking about now. Anyway, let's get into the first slice. It's a bit random, this first slice of bread, because I'm just going to sort of chat a bit about what I've been watching, what I've seen, what's coming up, that sort of thing. And what I'll do is I'll start off by mentioning one movie I haven't seen, one movie I have seen, and then I'll ask you a question. That'll be fun.
Okay.
So I went yesterday to see Late Night with the Devil. As being part of the horror community, it's been popping up everywhere. You got to watch this. You got to watch this. It is what it is. And I don't know if you've heard anything about it or not.
I'm aware of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I know the broad concept, and that it stars David Dastmalchian, but that's about it.
Yeah. So without any spoilers, essentially, it's a 70s talk show. Well, it's done like a sort of 70s talk show, like a ghost watch sort of thing. So it's almost done like live television. And I won't say too much about it. I mean, I think you can get the concepts quite similarly from the title. Like I say, I don't want to say too much about it, because I think a lot of people have been wanting to see it. And there's another movie that I've been wanting to watch, which is called Stop Motion. And the reason I'm mentioning Stop Motion is because actually Late Night with the Devil and Stop Motion are both Shudder releases, but they made it to the cinema, which I'm sort of interested to know what you think about that, because I know you love a cinema release. And yet, are we happy that Shudder are aiming for the cinema, or do we think that they should stick to streaming? It's a bit of a... For some reason, the question's been in my brain.
No, I think this is something that Apple are doing as well.
Right, yeah.
Because I know Killers of the Flower Moon and Napoleon and Argyle have all been Apple releases that have had a theatrical release first. And no, they should definitely go to cinema.
Yeah.
I know there is certainly a place for straight-to-streaming films.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in horror, because, you know, we talk about films, you know, you say your experience watching Paranormal Activity on a scratchy, you know, laptop on a dodgy copy or whatever it was. You know, that experience for the right film should be protected. And also it allows smaller budget films to maybe have a larger release and a bit more attention put on them, while, you know, not having to risk the distribution costs that go into the theatrical releases.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, you know, a big cinema release, it still gives a film a certain level of prestige, which I think straight to streaming doesn't. Streaming is... It's higher than your straight to video films, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't carry that sort of stigma about it. But yeah, theatrical release does have, stop motion. Stop motion does have that level of prestige.
Yeah,
and I think that, you know, for a right project, if it's got the belief, and if, you know, those distribution costs are met, it will potentially bring more money for a film, which will give it, you know, it'll put it back into Shudder, which will allow them to direct more money to other films, or also, you know, keep the costs for a Shudder subscription down, which is, you know, it's good for everybody.
True.
And also, you know, if they are putting them in cinemas, it will give it the chance to be seen by people who don't have a Shudder subscription, or, mm-hmm, you're an Apple subscription or whatever. and then also potentially drive them through the net, you know, to the service if they can. So
yeah, very true. Yeah, very true.
I don't see anywhere, unless these films just crash and burn, which I don't think they are, because for a start, I think the releases are very limited. So I think those costs are quite low, and kind of driving people to sort of quasi-events. Yeah, and yeah, unless they were really to crash and burn, I don't see how there's any downside to this.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I suppose with those films, and I think that stop motion has got something to do with Apple as well, because you can watch it on there, but it's certainly related with Shudder. But I suppose they're not pouring money into, promotion and stuff like that. So I guess it does, in terms of, you know, what you were saying about costs, it does keep it down. I think the reason that I was thinking about it was that for Shudder, because I like all these sort of exclusive releases and stuff like that. And it just, like, if I'm having to buy a cinema ticket as well, like, is that something that I want to keep doing? Because they were only showing that Late Night in the Devil at View Cinemas, which I don't have a membership for.
Yeah,
I really committed to that, in fact, because I went at 10 to 10. And
it's just about the only time they're showing it. Yeah. I mean, not even the cinema near me, but sort of half an hour drive away, it's like 9:30, so...
Yeah, I had to drive home from York, which people won't know how far that way that is for me, but yeah, like midnight. But, I've got nothing against going out there and doing that.
Yeah, so, we'll have to see if there is something nice on over the long weekend that's coming up / we've just had.
yeah. But the other thing is, while I was there, there was a trailer for about four different horror movies, and I was left feeling pretty low by all of them, to be quite honest with you. There was a movie called Tarot, which I don't even have to explain the concept of. I think if I said to you there's a movie about tarot cards, I reckon you could tell me what goes on in that. Maybe you couldn't, but I think you could. And I'm sort of getting to the point where I might be a bit sick of that sort of kind of horror film. I shouldn't really rag on something before I've seen it, but just watching the trailer, I was like, this is just... I don't know why they have to keep churning out the same old crap. There were two films. Like, there was one called Abigail, which looks fine. It's got something to do with people breaking into a house to kidnap a little girl, but it turns out the little girl's a vampire. And that looks like a horror comedy. Looks like a bit of fun. So actually, no, I'm too bad with that one. But the thing is, there was another film that I've forgotten the name of, but both Abigail and that had their words turned into fangs. And I thought, wow, is that where we're up to?
That's... horror's kind of always had that, probably more than any other genre, of just huge swathes of films of, you know, a poor churned out quality. And, you know, some of them slip through, and we get some good stuff that, you know, you might not generally expect. So
yeah, I suppose
hopefully those trailers don't do justice to how good the film is.
Yeah, I suppose it's unfair of me to judge a film based on its trailers, but I think
we can still say that a trailer's crap.
Although very true. Because I think there have been some films that have come out that apparently Immaculate is very good. Have you seen Immaculate?
No, that's one that I'm going to try and get to over the long weekend.
I've also heard that Lisa Frankenstein has been is quite good. So I'm sure there are movies this year. But it just made me sad to sit at the trailers and think, is this what I'm expecting? Whereas there are movies like, Late Night with the Devil, and from what I can tell, stop motion looks like my sort of film that, despite the limited cinema releases and me almost complaining about it, it's like these are the films that should be getting, you know, people back into the cinemas to watch horror films rather than just... But then I don't know. I honestly don't know, because there's something about, I think, probably your average horror fan does prefer, maybe not your average horror fan, but maybe a non-horror fan does prefer to go see something that is less weird. I kind of like the weird.
Yeah, I think there needs to be some lowest common denominator kind of, you know, thinking to be had to make money back on these sorts of films.
Yeah, yeah. I shouldn't...
And I think, again, you know, we say about horror, a lot of horror audience, I think, is teenagers on a weekend evening.
Yeah.
And generally speaking, they don't have a reputation for caring about the quality of the film, because they're usually doing other stuff in the cinemas, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
It was never me.
I suppose I've nothing to complain about, really. I should just keep my mouth shut.
Your ruminations.
I haven't seen these films, so I've no idea. And well, leading us into this week's filling, well, there was a trailer for the new Omen film. Omen the Beginning or something like that.
Just the first Omen, I think.
Oh, no, that might be it. The first Omen, yeah. Yeah, which I've no idea. I've no idea. Based on the trailer, in fairness, in this one, I've no idea what they're really doing with it.
Yeah, because having just watched the Omen.
Yeah.
This feels very much like the first one.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so, it's a bit of a... Anyway, we don't know, but at least we set up now to be able to watch it with some relevance. So let's get into it then. Let's talk about The Omen, this lovely filling. So The Omen here is 1976, directed by Richard Donner. And it stars Gregory Peck as Robert Thorne, Harvey Spencer Stevens as Damien Thorne, Lee Remick as Kathy Thorne, Billy Whitelaw as Mrs. Baylock, and there are quite a few different people in it, including the one guy who was Doctor who I've forgotten what his name was, sorry. Was he Patrick Troughton?
Patrick Troughton.
Was he he was Doctor Who, wasn't he?
He was, yeah.
Yeah, Patrick Troughton plays Father Brennan. The Omen. I must admit, I thought I'd seen The Omen. I definitely started watching it last year on my let's watch as many films as I can. I must not have carried on watching it. So I knew loads about this, but I don't think I'd actually sat through the whole thing. What about you? Have you seen this a few times? Once? Twice?
No, this was my first watch.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Although, having said that, I'm pretty sure 95% of it I'd picked up through osmosis.
Yeah, right,
somehow.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think you only need to find yourself on a 10 best kills thing, and you've seen at least a couple of these at some point. Which is fair. So, hang on, I'll have to cut this bit out. I'm interested to have this discussion with you, to be honest, because I currently am a bit cool on it. But I'm willing to chat about it and see if I like it a little bit more. There was a lot of stuff I did like about it. The sound design, for example, the sound design and the music in it is really great. But what did you think? How were you with it?
Well, my initial thought was that this kid is 55 or so now, I would think.
Yeah, right.
So there is 100% chance that if this was real, that kid's a Tory MP right now.
Almost definitely.
Possessed by, well, the son of the devil, of a, you know, rich background. Like, if anything, he's not quite evil enough to be in the current Conservative Party. But that was my main takeaway. No, with the film, though, I'm similar to you. I think I enjoyed it probably a bit more, judging from what you just said. But I think that there is a lot of stuff that this film does, and it feels like it was probably doing it, if not the first, as among the first.
Yeah, right.
Done a lot of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it's hard looking back at something that's nearly 50 years old and saying, you know, this feels like we've seen it all before, because it's, you know, yeah, we have, but people in 1976 probably hadn't.
I don't think that was merely my problem with it. I don't even know how to explain it. Not maybe the second act or somewhere.
I think that there were a few threads.
Yeah,
that didn't need to be there.
It loses momentum a bit. Yeah,
yeah. I think it dented the floor somewhat, and it sort of undercut the tension a bit.
Right.
So, you know, I think that the whole bit with the photographer, you know, I liked how it was giving us these, you know, literally omens for their deaths that were to come. But at the same time, it felt like it was just, it was there because we needed Gregory Peck to have someone to go to Italy with.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
No, and I felt like there were a couple of bits like that. You know, there was a bit where the mother was debating her choice of children, and she was struggling with the fact that she didn't love this kid and that she thought he was evil and that, which again is, it's a really interesting thing to pick up, but it's, you know, it's kind of dropped as soon as it's brought up in a lot of ways. And it's these, you know, these little bits and pieces that come and go in the film, you know, they kind of help to build the bigger picture of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't feel like they're all part of, you know, a not so much a cohesive story, but they don't all feel like they serve the story directly all the time.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I'm not going to say as coherently as you, really, but I think for me, essentially, when I was bored, I was really bored. I was just at those moments where I just felt like it wasn't driving itself forward as fast as it, I felt like it could have done. I was really bored. But that said, and I think those are the worst parts of it. Was I found myself bored at times, but there is a lot of good in this. For example, each death scene is fantastic. Really well done. I think the one with the church sort of spire, it's just, I don't know why, but it felt almost flawless. And I think it's one of those ones where you come away thinking you've seen a lot more than you saw. I'm sure you know what I mean there.
Yeah, I would say that the church spire, I liked it. The problem for me, which is probably a bit nitpicky, but I think the editing was a bit too slow right at the end of it.
Ah, right, yeah.
Felt like he was just stood there waiting for this thing to hit him.
Yeah. Well, it was a bit of a nut bar, really, wasn't he? It was a bit of a...
Yeah, and I want to... Yeah, I don't want to sound too cruel on it, because it was really good. Also, I love that it was used. There was a tribute to it in Hot Fuzz.
Yeah.
Which was Billy Whitelaw, who played Mrs. Baylock. It was her last screen feature. She played Joyce Cooper, the hotel manager.
Right.
So yeah, I like that sort of going through British horror films of this period. I'm really finding a lot of Hot Fuzz in them. With the way that Edward Woodward dies in a fiery inferno at the end of it. So, I'm just thinking, what else is there in Hot Fuzz I'm missing?
Oh, yeah, maybe go back. I keep going back to Hot Fuzz.
So we'll have to watch the films to find out.
Yeah, for sure. I did forget.
But, no, I really liked the first death, which, I mean, I'm not sure if we can call it a kill necessarily, because the nanny throws herself out of, well, right. So she jumps off a balcony, doesn't she, and goes through a window while strung up. Because that came out of nowhere for me, just how, it's sort of built towards, isn't it? But you don't expect something so dramatic, I suppose, or so immediate.
Right, yeah.
So I think that's a really great way that the film sets its tone, which I loved.
Yeah, any of that stuff. I think it does have a unsettling feel as a general rule. I think one of the sad bits about this movie, I'm going all over the place, is that most of the unsettling is done by adults. The kid himself is, I mean, it was the 70s, so I don't know what kid actors were really like in the 70s, to be quite honest with you. But he doesn't have now about him. I mean, I didn't like. I thought he was an annoying kid, but not evil. And I thought, does he know he's evil? I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's... Again, that's something that I really liked about the film, is that this kid, he is this, son of Satan, but at the same time he's still kind of just a kid, and it feels that the evil within that he's destined for, feels that it's a lurking threat, while the real evil is committed by adults, isn't it? It's committed by the apostles of Satan.
Oh, yeah.
Mrs. Baylock specifically. So it kind of gives this feeling that potentially this kid could be saved if he was... put in the right circumstances, because these things only kind of kick off once she gets on the scene, isn't she? The rest of the time, she seems like a reasonably well-known boy. I suppose that the first nanny committing suicide, she's that's before Mrs. Baylock comes along, but
yeah,
you know, they don't suspect the problem with him before then.
No. I don't know what else I really want to say about it. I mean, I enjoyed all the things that I knew were coming up. There was a lot of the deaths. The photographer Keith Jennings? Is he called Keith Jennings? I think. Like David Warner. His head getting chopped off by the sheet glasses is very good. And as you say, that's a sort of almost legacy death scene, because we've seen that probably quite a lot since. I can think Final Destinations, all that sort of stuff. Sheet glass is dangerous. So I enjoyed all that stuff. I'm still sort of stuck on it, really, because I found it sort of mostly boring, apart from the bits. Oh, that's such a stupid thing to say. Hang on. Yeah, I enjoyed the horror elements, but I found everything else to be mostly boring or annoying. I didn't, for example, the character, Gregory Peck's character and his wife, they're just really unlikable. I don't give a monkey's bum. Like, maybe try and raise your kid instead of dumping him off on nannies left, right, and center. And I know it's easy to say, but, you know, it's...
Yeah, I mean, there's
a choice, though, do you think?
Well, there's a lot of parallels I found with Don't Look Now for this.
Yeah, right.
Which they share a considerable amount of DNA, I think, in that it's, you know, that there's these ideas about parenthood and the lack thereof, and how, you know, people are just. Certainly, the wealthy are willing to
very strong
their kids off onto others to do the parenting for them, and the sort of the poor consequences that come about as such. And it goes back to what we were kind of saying before about how, you know, that there is this feeling that there is a hope for Damien if he's, you know, looked after and treated properly as a child should have been, rather than just nanny will sort it.
Mm. Yeah. So do you think, given this, does this movie have like the sort of real feeling of the presence of the devil or the presence of a strong evil like that? Or does it fit into some, could it just be anything else? Because there's that as well. It feels like there could have been more religious aspects to it that didn't seem to quite mesh up with it. There was some part of that to it as well. Or have I lost the track of the movie somewhere?
Yeah, I mean, there's. This film wouldn't be too great if they were just sort of setting it in churches and having, you know, beating you over the head with the religious iconography of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because I think there's quite a large aspect of it where, while we were saying about how Damien could have been saved if he was, you know, loved as a child, there is also that theory that the priest puts forward that, you know, if they were to accept God and to take communion, that was also a possibility. So it's, There is that definite aspect of turning away from faith, which allows evil to prosper. Personally, I don't buy that myself, but it's definitely something that the film considers.
Yeah, I think it just loses me along the way. I think that's all it is. It's just sort of a personal thing where I enjoyed the horror elements, but most of the other stuff just loses me along the way, really. It's not... there's nothing more to it than that. I do have an interesting story that I learned from this movie, which it feels very 70s. So there's a scene in this where they go to the sort of zoo and the baboons attack the car.
Yes.
Well, apparently, because the baboons were at that zoo, that it actually isn't within their nature to just attack the cars because they see them all day long. So what happened was they got the alpha baboon and essentially drugged him and put him in the back of the car. And then while the wife is screaming, I forgot her name, apparently the baboon had woken up and was pulling her hair. It's not very safe, is it?
No.
There's something feels very sort of 70s, you know, like, don't worry about anyone's safety. We'll do with that later. Yeah, good stuff. Well, bad stuff, actually. Look after your actors, bar. The only other thing is, apparently, Richard Donner said the kid was a nightmare to work with. Yeah, but he probably was just an annoying kid like he is in the film. Well, she got anything else, or are we there?
No, I think I'm ready to stick a bow on it. I don't have much more.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll go in then. I think I've said everything I need to say, but I think I probably expected more because it's a bit of a legacy horror film. And as I said right at the beginning, I think the sound design, which I think won an Oscar on this film, is really great. But the plot loses me, so I'm going to give it a new It's Spooky.
Yeah, it's got that big score, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we're just back to where we started with this one, I think. Yeah, because I feel broadly similar. It's, you know, it's an inconsistent trip from beginning to end, isn't it? There is a lot of stuff to like in this film.
Yeah.
Probably a lot of that we didn't mention. And again, I think it's probably more pioneering than we realize.
I mean, the visual effects are good. It's directed well. There's some good cinematography, but it, like I said, it loses me on plot.
Yeah, and there is a lot that doesn't really stick for me as well. So I'm probably going to see A Creative Psychopath. Just it's in that gap between Oh It's Spooky and Creative Psychopath for me.
Yeah. I mean, I weighed with that because, you know, on the other hand, I do, you know, I've said this before, I like a legacy movie. I love to see where things have come from, but I just couldn't get past it. Lovely then. Well, let's move on. Let's move away from this movie. So everyone, obviously the social medias are available to you. There's the Facebook group where we normally try and post what movie we've been watching. We didn't do with this one because we were a little bit sort of schedule was a bit weird. Instagram, really, those are the main two. We have Twitter, but all I really do is post on there every week what I've been doing. Not what we've been doing in the episode. Why am I talking so much about social media? I suppose it takes up a lot of our lives, doesn't it?
It certainly does.
Yes.
Too much, frankly.
Yeah, far too much. And also, please give us a review. If you're in a place where you can write a review, that's fantastic. It really does help us get seen. But yeah, aside from that, we'll travel into the final slice of bread, which Matthew's going to take the reins and I'm going to shut up for a bit, maybe.
Yeah, so this is me just being
you,
doing my what I've been watching. So, but I'm going to talk about a specific event. I recently went to the Darkness in the Fields Folk Horror Film Festival, which is a one-day film festival that was in Derby, and I had a wonderful time. It was long. It was 10 hours or so, a lot of sitting, numb bottom. But there was four films, features, well, 3.5 features, and then a little short film showcase. And it was all films I heard nothing about before. There's a couple of Q&As as well, which... really good. So I was going to sort of share them in the hope that, say, we can use our platform, however small it may be, just to sort of, you know, get some more eyes on these films, because so they were certainly worthy of it all in one form or another.
Absolutely.
I'll go very quickly over the short film fest. You know, the short films, because there was four of them, and I don't want to be here all night doing it. So the first was a short film called Become, directed by Sarah Leiter, which I enjoyed. It was very much a short film in the sense that it felt like it was a couple of scenes out of a larger film. So it kind of gave a bit of mystery, rather than giving a full story in and of itself, which I thought was pretty cool. Then there was probably second favourite of the day, I'd say.
All right.
Of the short films, called Blackthorn, which gave it... It was folk horror. It was what kind of urbanised. It gave a Stepford Wives kind of feel about it, about a small town, and they have to give gifts to something, which we don't know what it is. But that was, yeah, I really enjoyed that one. And again, there's probably scope for a feature there, hopefully, if someone wants to put some money into it. That was directed by Christopher Ratcliffe.
All right.
Then the next one was called Blight. And I didn't really care for this one too much. It was more of a horror comedy. It played really well in the room, though, so I'm probably really wrong. It was directed by Craig Sinclair, and it was more of a horror comedy. The comedy didn't really land for me, and there was one pretty effective jump scare in it, but that was about it for the horror. And it was more of just a sort of a wacky period piece after that for me.
Right.
And then the last one, which is strange because it's a film from the UK, but it's not in English because it's a Welsh film, called The Worm of Bulch Pen Barris, which was directed by Craig Williams. And this looked really nice. It was shot on Kodak film.
Right.
Which probably, to me, says it had a bigger budget than the others in the short films showcase. But yeah, it was all in Welsh. And it was about a group of guys who had a sort of mysterious task. And this was basically... you work it out pretty quickly. It's human sacrifice to this ancient being.
Right.
Not sure that there would be enough in it for a feature. Certainly not a full horror feature. But I was left wanting more. I think you could have doubled the runtime quite easily.
All right, that sounds good.
But yeah, so we'll post the names of it down on the Facebook group, or just the film list, just to try and share them. Hopefully, they're available to watch on YouTube. Hopefully, we can do that on our chat. And then right then, so then we got into the features. So we got into the muck of it then. So the first was an Irish film called All You Need Is Death, which don't let the title fool you. The title I thought was awful, and when I saw it listed, I rolled my eyes and just thought, God, what's this going to be? But it's a story about ethno musicologists who are trying to find music that nobody else has heard, so it can be sort of studied and preserved and stuff.
Right.
Then they, as you would probably expect, stumble onto music that is not meant for human ears, sort of thing. So they'll. I think there is. A lot of this that was, I wasn't quite sure where the film was going with it.
Yeah.
Because they do all this talk of music in the film, as you would expect. But I'm not sure if music in the film is treated the same way as music is in, you know, it's as we know it as people, because it's kind of treated as it having this power, which of course music does, but it's never really explained whether that power is the power that we know it to be, or whether it's this other. You know, other feeling that we don't quite, you know, that's different in the world of the film. And I think that kind of it sort of put a wall up between me and the film that I could never really get past that, to try and really understand the horror of it.
All right.
But still an enjoyable film. Looking at the letterbox after, it's got some really good reviews as well, so it's one I'd probably happily watch again, just to try and sort of square that circle, sort of thing. And yeah, definitely worth a watch.
Yeah, I like the sound of that one.
Yeah, they didn't list a director, but they did on the other bit of the page. Yeah, that was directed by Paul Dwayne. Yeah, it was a regional premiere, so I'm not sure if that's for the UK or just theatrical sort of in the region, but hopefully it's something that gets picked up and maybe gets shown a bit more around. And then we went back to 10 years or so ago to one which I would be surprised if you haven't seen, actually, The Borderlands.
I haven't.
You have it right.
I keep meaning to. It's supposed to be brilliant.
So, yeah, this is one that I think you would have enjoyed the most, because this is it's a found footage movie, which basically tells you it all. But it gives us a story of just a team of investigators who are in a small country church. They've been sent by the Vatican to verify mysterious happenings as a miracle.
Right.
Which is a great concept. Like I was in straight away from that. And then, yeah, there's more to this church than meets the eye. And yeah, that was directed by Elliot Goldner. But it was the script had a late punch up from Sean Horgan, who was in the room and he introduced it.
All right.
Basically told the story that the the distributors thought that the film was a disaster, which he disagreed with, but you know, did a punch up to improve it, and then it got a bit of a reputation after it screened the Fright Fest, and yeah, a bit of a cult classic now.
Yeah, I've been wanting to watch it for absolutely ages, but I can never find it. It's never streaming anywhere. You know, and do I want to pay out for the Blu-ray? Probably not.
But no, it's definitely, yeah, it was, again, probably second on my...
All right, okay.
Favorite films.
But yeah, I've been wanting to watch that for ages.
The next one, which was also by Sean Horgan. So he had a good afternoon. I hope he had some money off this. But again, he did a Q&A as well as screening his film, To Fire You Come At Last.
Right.
Which also came out late last year. Incredible, some of the production stories, because from sort of proof of concept to screening to editing to, sorry, filming to editing to release was over like just a few months. They shot it in like 5 days, and it's a short film. It's 48 minutes or so.
Right.
So it's kind of in that middle gap between your feature and a short. And yeah, this was my favorite film of the day. So it follows a story of four guys who are carrying a coffin from a village to the churchyard, which is a couple of hours walk away overnight. As the walk goes into the darkness, there is a haunted road, or you know, thought to be haunted, and the relationships between the men carrying the coffin get tested, because they all realize that they have a connection to the person in the coffin. Way I would describe it would be an Inspector Calls meets a Field in England. And I mean, for me, that's that would be right up my street if someone described it to me like that. But yeah, I loved it. It's got a really good look to it. It's black and white, but it's very much... You can only ever really see the people in question, and everything else is just pitch black, and it looks fantastic. It's got this real atmosphere as a result of that. And yeah, it was great because Sean Horgan was joined by James Swanton, who is an actor who's been in quite a few films that you've enjoyed. He was in Host and Dashcam.
Right.
And he's also in Stop Motion. So.
Oh, really? I'm really looking forward to watching
stuff. Yeah, he's a guy that is doing good stuff that we like. So
yeah,
it was good to hear him talk about the acting process for the film as well.
Yeah.
And then, the last one of the day, which was... another one which I think you would be interested in, for sure, because it's set up around your neck of the woods, called The Moor.
Oh, aye.
This was directed by Chris Cronin, and he also did a Q&A for the film as well, which was really good to hear, because it was his debut feature. And it follows, it's 25 years after a series of abductions, around the Moors area. One of the fathers of the abducted kids is working with that child's friend to try and find the body so that they can extend the sentence of the guy who did the kidnappings. And they go up to the moor, and there's creepy stuff up there, and also they use the help of people who have special abilities.
Oh.
And I think that this it suffered by being made by a director who was clearly very, very eager, very keen, very invested in the subject. And I think that excitement went a bit... You could see it get to him because it's a film that throws a lot at the wall.
Right.
I think it would be worth just sort of paring back a little bit. Maybe take out a few of the elements that are in there, which is, and you're probably a little bit harsh on it. And also, it probably didn't help that it was the last film of a, you know, quite a long day. So I'm probably a bit more tired and cranky than I was for the film's sort of mid-afternoon. But it's definitely, definitely worth a watch. So we'll list all these films.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You could hunt for them because they were definitely, definitely worth your time for sure. I had a really good afternoon at the festival. Hopefully it was a success and it's something that they can run again.
Were there a lot of people there?
Yeah, I mean it's the sort of thing that would be perfect for the autumn because British folk horror just loves darkness and bad weather.
Feels autumnal, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, that's perfect for autumn. And you know, it's amazing when you just get to just experience stuff that you would just never come across otherwise. You know, I don't think any of those films, except maybe The Borderlands, would I have ever? I don't think I would ever have stumbled across them.
Right? Yeah.
And to be just to have someone pick them for you, you say, "Look, we're doing this thing. Come to it." And yeah, it was great, and like I loved it, and yeah, I think it actually just want to issue like a call to action sort of thing. You know, it's we were saying about streaming and you know, theatrical releases earlier. It's part of a film ecosystem where we have streaming, you know, home releases. We have sort of your multiplex cinemas, which is what 90% of the films that we go for. And then we've got this smaller art house cinemas that, you know, suffer, you know, because of the size of them, because they don't show as many mainstream films. And like, if you can, go support them. If there's one near you, if there's one a little bit further than your multiplex, you know, try and make the effort, take a chance on something, because like I did for this, I have done a few other times at that cinema, and I loved it, and more often than not I do love it because it's curated by people that care and that know what they're doing.
Yeah. Sounds fantastic. It was a shame I missed it. I forgot about it. My memory's no good.
Don't worry, you'll hear about the next one.
My memory's no good. I mean, I'd like to get to more of these festivals anyway. I know there's a horror one in Glasgow and stuff like that that I've been meaning, or maybe it's Edinburgh, I can't remember, that I've been meaning to get to. So yeah, that's something for the future, maybe something we can add to our podcast list. But it sounds like you had a really great time, and I'm gonna look up a few of those movies. Obviously the Moor, because it's in Yorkshire. The Moor, as it were. Is that where Heathcliff was? Was he a cat?
Yeah, he's all the Brontes wrote all about the...
They loved it up there.
Their local area, didn't they?
Up there, up Moor. Oh, whatever. Well, yeah, no, lovely. That was really interesting to listen to. I kept my mouth shut and really listened. That was nice to me, I thought. What a kind co-host I am. Or are you a co-host?
I think it's more a case of that I just carried on and didn't let you get a word in edgeways.
No, no, I didn't. I was quite happy. I was quite happy to not have my usual brand of rambling idiocy. Listen to your intelligent chat. Anyway, that said, we're done. I think that was the final slice of bread. You added a lovely crust there. So let's go. Let's leave. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.